Welcome to Stoner. This week on the show, Ian Vanek. He was in a band called Japanther that was a very big deal when I moved to New York in my neighborhood. He has a new project called Howardian that are coming out with an album later this month. He actually emailed me and said, I believe his direct statement was that I should have some people on the show who actually smoked some weed because it seemed like most of the guests were kind of lightweight. So I said, by all means, come on the show. He told me that he was currently touring the country playing shows by himself from a motorcycle. We had a really interesting conversation. Here it is. Welcome, Ian Vanek.
Thank you.
Where are you coming from?
Today I rode my motorcycle from Bed-Stuy, but I'm from Olympia, Washington.
I went to Olympia once when I was maybe about 20, and a lot of the things that you're interested in or your career has taken you through, do-it-yourself music, zine making, do-it-yourself culture in general, I identify Olympia as like the densest concentration of that culture that I ever experienced.
I agree.
In a lot of ways, like that actually is closer to what I imagined New York would be like than New York actually was. All that stuff's happening in New York, but it's happening like in this extremely diffuse backdrop of like everything happening.
Yeah.
What was it like being a teenager there?
I really loved it. We got a chance to interact with the record label Kill Rock Stars, the record label K Records, and those were just hives of artists swarming about. So my band in high school, I have to pinch myself, and like we got to play the Bikini Kill, we got to play these shows that I'm like, did that really happen? Is that a story? But it definitely happened. So that experience as a young person is life-altering to the fact where I'm still 37 and I'm doing a DIY tour on a motorcycle right now by myself. And it's fascinating. I'm with 19-year-old punks who are just like, what? Asking questions and having fun, but I'm also learning from them. So it gave me that youthfulness that has me moving into 2017, still wanting to pursue independent do-it-yourself culture.
Okay, so you came to New York and at some juncture started a band called Japanther. How long between arriving in New York and starting to play in bands?
Well, in Olympia, I played in bands often, so it was a few months or really, I just had to start something else. And Japanther was an art project that we started at Pratt Institute with a very unlikely skater kid that, you know, ended up being my best friend for 13 years. Really, really cool. So when we were 20 years old, I guess it had been like almost a full year. And believe it or not, there wasn't a huge music scene in New York City at that time. So we got to play with bands like Yeah Yeah Yeahs and TV on the Radio, which now seems like a crazy gift. But at that time, there was only 20, 30 actual independent rock bands. Japanther got to do their first show with Lightning Bolt. That was with Pink and Brown, which is now the OCs. All these amazing bands that were like, oh, will you play your show with us? So our first show is heavily attended, and it's on the Lightning Bolt documentary film. All this crazy stuff happened to us. So at that moment, there wasn't a lot going on. And Japanther filled, a void of people just doing DIY music in New York City and taking it seriously and living here and paying rent and working jobs, but also traveling the entire world saying that this is our independent expression coming out of New York City. I think at some point that kind of shift where if I say that I'm from Brooklyn today, it's almost a shame point, which maybe your listeners again would be upset about that. But as a musician,
when did you feel that shame point tip?
I moved out of New York in 2013 to pursue my life, and I started a band called Howardian in 1994, but I picked it up in 2013 and said, I'm gonna do this band. I was sick of doing Japanther and decided to quit one afternoon. But that's not to belittle I just felt like we accomplished everything we wanted to accomplish with Japanther.
Yeah.
We were in the Venice Biennial. We were in the Whitney Biennial. We performed at the MoMA. We got to do so many incredible things that a, quote, art project would do. Taking expression and putting it away is one of the hardest things for an artist to do. And moving to the next thing is even harder. So that's what I'm experiencing now and feel really great about it.
What did it mean to you to be involved in something that was an art project rather than like a band?
Well, it's hugely important to differentiate the two. We didn't like bands. I still feel really upset about a lot of the heteronormative masculine behavior that happens in bands and backstage and stuff. That's a big deal in my life that I saw rock bands. I was like, well, that's not me. That's a fucking drag. They're sexist. They're fucking assholes. They're drunk. I don't super like alcohol. I love marijuana. That's why I'm on this podcast. I think marijuana is potentially female. I think that's why it's marijuana. It's the dancing green lady. And it's a conversation with a plant that's really beautiful. And that conversation always kind of told me, like, be sensitive. And the heteronormative behavior of that rock scene was not something that I saw as sensitive or beautiful. And attending art school, I just thought that, oh, if we take this label of band off of it, we can go into the MoMA and tell them we're going to make some sculptures and turn on a Fender and do whatever you want, which I thought was a beautiful, like a really simple and beautiful kind of unlock to all these spaces that I saw in New York as beautiful.
Where did starting weed smoke for you? When did you first smoke weed?
I thought about this a bit, probably when I was like 11. And again, it's associated with music and playing drums for people that, you're like, oh, you're going to come and play drums. We're 16, 17. And them offering me weed, and like, I don't think weed works the first time you smoke it. It just kind of confuses your brain because it's a new feeling. So I think when I was 11, I smoked weed, but then I think I started smoking weed when I was like 17 or 18.
Yeah.
Again, based on older kids who wanted me to play drums with them and were like, oh, we're getting this weed.
Were they thinking that it was going to improve your drumming if they exposed you
to
weed?
I wonder if that's the case. I really do. I don't know. Maybe more about just the interest of being bad has always been there in my life.
Yeah.
Of like not doing what people tell you. And that's a strange concept, because then you come to this conversation with this plant and the plant turns out to not be doing all bad.
Yeah.
It's just more the way that we talk to it. So if you're smoking it through a pop can in an attic somewhere in like hot Yakima, Washington, that's maybe not the best conversation. That's like getting an old cell phone, breaking it, and then trying to call someone. The conversation can be had where you're vaping a really clean CO2 on, you know, the Big Sur coast while watching waves and whales hang out. You're like, oh, this is maybe a better conversation with marijuana. It's telling me that, like, I should really look deeply at whales, think about the fact that they're mammals, and take down some of those walls that we put up really quickly of, like, the construct of who Aaron is or who Ian is comes away really fast if you're having the right conversation.
How did, for you, like, how did that consciousness evolve? Like, when did you sort of start feeling like there was a listening component to it for you?
I'm still developing and thinking and reading about plants and about herbs. I've had some issues with my nervous system in my life. One of the reasons I quit Japanther is having a lot of issues with my nervous system, which were largely stress-based.
Yeah.
And I was destroyed. My left leg didn't work. The nerves were done. It was a hollow log. And I went to a lot of doctors, and I really – that's, I think, an interesting part of this conversation, too, is we can talk about pills and doctors and opiates and things like that.
Did you try that stuff?
Did I try that stuff? No, I had to take morphine for the levels of pain that I was going through. To even get like 2 or 3 hours of sleep or 40 minutes of sleep would be, you know, a nice heavy hit of morphine, which sucks.
And were you like also smoking weed during this period? And
you know, I stopped because of the sensitivity of the nerves. It was just causing more pain.
Wow.
So I didn't have cannabis in my life. And
you were touring still during this period?
Slowly but surely stopping until I just basically lay on a floor 24 hours a day or would crawl to the bathroom.
Wow.
It was pretty fucking intense. I had to start having these conversations. I'm trying to get back to answer your question.
No,
I had to start listening to and getting with the idea of like, well, what is this? You know, what is morphine except for an essential oil of the poppy plant, right? So what they do is take a shitload of poppies, grind them up, press them, cook them, do whatever they can. They get a drop of oil out and they put that in a pill and it's real, real strong and they send it to you. We're doing that with marijuana too, right?
Yeah.
We're making oils and dabs out of it. And that's
99%
again,
99% pure THC crystals.
Yeah, when are we going to get to 200? But that's another conversation that I have had and you have had, but I don't want to continue to have because that's something we call heroana.
Have you been back to Washington post-legalization?
I spent a lot of time in Washington State.
What's it like?
Well, they legalized it and then they kind of pretty fast, they backed up. So there was a 2-year period where we had farmers markets.
Yeah.
So people that grow weed are called farmers, and then they had markets where the farmers would come there. It's not like the farmers market, like Pike Place Market. This was legit. I grew this. I'm proud of it. It's, you know, $10 a gram, or this is $1 a gram because it's outdoor, or this is $15 a gram because everyone knows it's the best one. So you go to these farmers markets, and meeting people was incredible, like getting to know these growers who I still am in contact with, the ones I like. I like the way you make edibles. I don't like the way you make edibles. So I'm going to have a conversation with you, like an actual conversation. And then a conversation with the plant that they grow was really beautiful and cool. They shut those farmers markets down. Too many people were being crazy and taking samples at the farmers market. And people were getting high and leaving there and doing whatever. God knows what happened. So I got you. We can't really maybe have that. But there was a beautiful moment. it still is today, like walking into a liquor store. I'll get back on the airplane there on Tuesday morning and we'll go to essentially a gas station and get a pre-roll and go to the beach. And it's completely legal as long as the seal is on the pre-roll until we get to the beach.
Does it change your mentality? Like when you're on that beach smoking that legal joint, do you think that actually makes it feel different for you?
Potentially. I still participate and support the black market. I think that the black market will win out almost always. So it's not going to be as good a joint is my answer to that question. I know a few brands that I like, and I even know people that work for some of the brands, but it's like smoking a Marlboro cigarette and saying, oh, this was a good Marlboro. There's no way of knowing that because it's a manufactured product, where if I go and say, oh, I know the room this comes from and the person that did it and there's love in it and they definitely don't put chemicals in it. For me, psychosomatically, the high is better, sure.
Do you smoke weed when you're writing music?
Constantly, yeah. That's one of the funny things when I sent you an email. I was like, I'm disappointed by how much your listeners smoke weed.
I know, your email was like, your guests are total cowards. No, it's true. I mean, what someone who smokes like a lot of weed could mean in New York right now ranges from people I know who might smoke weed once a month to people who smoke weed 5 or 6 times every day.
Right.
And all of those people probably to their group of friends is a person who smokes a lot of weed.
Oh, totally. I agree.
Are you like at the like kind of peak weed for like the people you hang out with, or are most people on the same page as you?
I would put myself a tier below some of the people I'm around.
Wow.
Yeah. The bass player of Howardian got throat cancer strictly from smoking pot. That can give you
the
levels of weed smoking. So again,
this is someone who's under the age of 40. Got throat. Wow,
he's 42. So
that's a lot of weed.
And no cigarettes in this person's life.
Wow.
But a heavy, just like very reggae style, smoking 3 grams at once. So it's a carcinogen, and yeah. I don't make any qualms about said carcinogens. That's again why I even bring up the having conversations with a plant, because we're addicted to butane as well as marijuana smokers. A lot of times we don't want to talk about or think about that, but we're sucking on Bic the whole time too. It's interesting, you know. I think that being a potential Alzheimer's patient later in my life is not a great look to be smoking and sucking on butane constantly. Like, it's actually a horrible look. So if that happens later in life, that's kind of on me.
So you're just touring right now on a motorcycle by yourself.
Got my DR650 and
how touring. Big is this motorcycle?
It's a 650. It's an enduro. It's a dirt bike. It's really fun.
What do you carry with you when you're touring on a motorbike?
I have my sampler. Who's a drum machines?
Yeah, a little.
It's an SP, and I have a laptop, which is not a part of the show. I have some drumsticks. I have some clothes. It's basically a backpack and a sleeping bag.
Yeah.
On my back. I was touring with a band called Teenage Halloween, who I'll put a big plug in for. Their amazing, like very young trans and queer band. So being on the road with 19-year-old trans and queer people was a huge eye-opener.
How are you like regarded on a tour like that, where you're like quite different than people on several different levels?
It's interesting. It's one of the things I love about DIY is the level of acceptance and that practice of the level of acceptance every night. I'm certainly like cis and hetero and like I step to the back of the conversation a lot of the times and just like, oh, it's really interesting to hear this. And
yeah,
because the people that are 19 or 20 right now are seamlessly treating each other better than we did when we were 19 or 20. And I can unequivocally say that they're a lot more invested in how their future will look than I was when I was 20.
Yeah. What inspired you when you were like, you know, you described yourself as a bad kid, mm-hmm. dropped out of school. Like, where does that come from?
Well, I'm anti-Catholic. I went to Catholic school where they would paddle your butt and do things like that. And it just always seemed like such a farce. So getting to that space of what bad means, or indulging in what other people think of as bad, was always the place I felt most alive. Because, well, yeah, fuck you. Like, you're trying to tell me that you're righteous. Cool. I'm going to be doing exactly what I'm told not to do, which to me is making independent media. I write my zine to this day. It's called 99 Millimeter, and it's about graffiti, and it's about counterculture, and it's about freaks and bands, and we review records, and we review restaurants, and we do whatever we want, because you're not supposed to do a magazine like that. You're supposed to be selling advertising. We don't sell advertising. We don't care about that. We publish for free, and we give it away largely for free. That being bad is such an easy title, because it's the opposite of being bad. It's participating in life and being a human and being interested in your own life.
How has your creative process and your relationship to your art changed from starting Japanther as a project when you were a kid, basically, to starting a new band as a totally, you know, at a different, totally different stage in your life?
It's been pretty great. I guess I have to back up and say that I started Howardian when I was 13 in 1993.
Oh, okay.
So I started before reversed. Japan. It's a very strange thing.
Right, but so they're both running in sort of parallel cycles.
They are
then.
Running in this strange parallel yeah. cycle. Those processes have changed a lot, where before we throw out as much as potentially possible, I think as a 37-year-old, I'm trying to slow down a little bit and make more intentional art. Howardian is in its fourth year of reboot. We're on our fourth record.
Yeah.
Just making
it's a pretty
things.
Good clip.
It's a lot of albums.
Are you on the clock making music every day? Like,
yeah, yeah. I wake up to Ableton and to the MP, and I'm learning the ASR right now. Just trying to expand my brain on what drum machines and samplers can do. I love sample-based music. I love hip-hop and scratching. I love new music. I love seeing yeah. live music. So yeah, I'm on the clock every day as a musician. And that's something that I told myself. No one told me that. No one said, okay, now you can be a musician. I quit a job as a truck driver here in New York City and said, fuck this. You're a musician. Be a musician. And when it's peanut butter time, it's peanut butter time. And when it's caviar, enjoy. Japanther had some caviar times where we were having a fucking ball and being treated really well as young men, which was a huge gift. This band has had some lean times because who needs another band in a sea of bands? So we're working very hard to still make music and be positive in that light.
What's it viscerally like riding around on a bike? Like, what are your main concerns like when you're like touring on the back of a motorcycle?
Oh, I'll tell a funny.
Seems physically grueling.
I will tell you a funny story just because it relates into what we're dealing with in our racist administration and also with the question you just asked about being physically grueling. I was riding on Interstate 79 south in Pennsylvania, which is right south of Erie, PA, south of the lake, way up in northwestern Pennsylvania, coming out of Buffalo. And it went down to one lane very quickly. And I said, oh, shit. And I'm coming up on the guy too fast. So I just go into the shoulder on my motorcycle and breeze past the first 10 cars that are in traffic. And they're all going maybe 15 miles an hour. And I'm going 45, 35, 25. And at about 25, I'm just letting you roll off is what it's called. You stop accelerating instead of like hitting your brakes and jarring yourself. You just roll off. And I see an opening and I say, okay, cool. I'm at about 25, 15. I'm matching these people. I'm going to hit a little bit of brakes and get into traffic. The van right there decides I'm going to speed up and hit you with my car on purpose. Drives, smacks me with his car. I go over the handlebars onto the side of the highway, bend the bars. The guy pulls over his van, comes up to me and decides, hey, you fucking pussy. This is not a fucking passing lane, you asshole, you motherfucker. And my gut feeling is this person's about to pull out a gun. I pick up my bike. I check myself out. Okay, no broken bones. Nothing's hanging and flopping. Okay. I take my bars. I bend my bars back real good and get them into a place where I'm like, that's going to have to do for now. Start my bike. And I tell the guy, and I'm proud of myself for this part. I mustered this. I put up a peace sign and I said, peace and blessings. And he said, what the fuck did you say? So I said, and I was like, peace and blessings, brother, and gun my bike. And this is the part I'm not proud of, and come and get me if you want to. I smashed his mirror with my palm. And I know that to be a $160 mirror, having driven some Chevy vans in my life. So potentially his little temper and hitting a motorcyclist got him a $160 trip to the junkyard. This fucking guy jumps in his van and starts chasing me again, swerving at me and trying to hit me while I'm in the gravel on the side of the road. There's two huge gravel trucks in front of me, and I shoot the lane between the gravel trucks with, like, I don't even think I'm thin enough. Like, fuck me. But terrified. The guy's going to just hit my back tire and cause me to die because that's what he was aiming to do. He's honking and yelling and shit. I get between the gravel trucks, look at the gravel truck driver like, can you not see the desperation in my eyeballs? You think I'm passing you like this because I want to be? Those two gravel truck drivers, thank God, were like, oh, we see what's going on. A redneck's chasing a motorcyclist. They both just hit the, like, 10-mile-an-hour crept. I pull my bike off at the next exit, put my bike in the dumpster, close the gates on the dumpster in some, you know, whatever get-and-go parking gas station. And right then, the woman comes out to empty the dumpster, and she's like, are you okay? And I just have my head between my legs. I'm trying to do yoga and like hyperventilating, getting ready for a real ass fight, like getting ready to basically die. And she put her arm on me and was like, there's a lot of ignorant people out there. And that moment of human contact, I was like, oh, thank God, I melted. And it's like, there are, thank you so much. Can I hang out here for a minute? Yeah, come inside. I'll get you some water. And I got to a place on my motorcycle not an hour and a half later, which I'm really proud of myself for having done my, I go to therapist, I do my work emotionally and mentally. I got to a place, it's like, you're hitting motorcyclists with your car. I'm headed to a DIY space to watch young musicians kind of pour their heart out. And there's no win or lose. It's that I want that person to come with me. Come to the DIY show. Let's hang out and like ease back a bit. On my motorcycle, I found that zen of forgiving this person and saying, I'm sorry that your life is in a place where you're going to hit a motorist and like potentially kill them to teach them driver's ed lessons. I'm going to go to the DIY show and smoke bowls with my friends and tell the story about how I'm still alive and get hugs from like a bunch of friends who are like, I'm so happy that you're here and that you're alive. And playing the show means that much more that evening. So, but again, I think that marijuana plays into that as well, because it gives me a sense of, if I could get to Pittsburgh where Hakeem's at, we can smoke a bowl and I'll watch him play saxophone and things will even out, because that person will have empathy and love for you, even though we're not that old of friends.
At the end of the show, we like to do a little set of the same questions I ask everyone. It's called Peak Experiences.
Yeah.
The first question is, what is your favorite way to enjoy marijuana?
Oh, wow. Have you ever done a milkshake?
No.
Get a pint glass and freeze it overnight and then take a joint and shotgun it into the frozen glass, and the smoke will stay there in the glass, and then you can just drink a hit. Oh, that's a nice way to smoke weed, because the other person has smoked the joint, they've shotgunned it into the glass, so you really don't have to do anything but sip on this nice frosty tall glass of smoke. That's very beautiful and like in luxurious.
Requires
way to smoke
weed. Advanced planning too, which I like.
Yeah, it has to be. Well, yeah,
you
it's
have to like
special.
Leave yourself like a note in the morning. Uh-huh. And put glass in the freezer.
Lots of ways. I like vaping. The CO2, I think, is really clean and really beautiful. And again, like when you're into a conversation with a plant, getting to those new levels, like you said, it's a different experience because it's free of butane and free of any carbons.
So I don't understand what you're saying about butane, because like, all right, let's say I light a joint with a lighter, but sure. Then I turn the lighter off and the joint is just sort of burning down.
It's at first, you have
first
to inhale.
No, that first hit where you're right. Inhaling the butane. That's not good.
Well, I'll tell you so maybe not my peak experience way of smoking weed, but the way we oftentimes smoke weed on tour.
Yeah, your mid-grade experience.
Let's go to the mids. is every 7-Eleven is a head shop. I like to say that. I published an article called that. You can get an Apple there.
Yes.
And a Bic lighter. And if you're on tour, a lot of times you don't want to have paraphernalia, because if you're anyone that has ever run into John Law and had marijuana, paraphernalia is almost a greater charge than the marijuana is oftentimes. So
yeah.
You have an apple, you can eat it as
even like rolling papers, you don't want to keep anything.
No, that's paraphernalia. So we oftentimes just get one, again, a cold apple is very nice to put in the fridge, and it acts as a filter. So you just make your little apple bong and smoke it that way. But oftentimes, if you're smoking an apple for too long, which happens on tour, you're sucking a lot of butane down. So that's probably where my paranoia comes from.
Right on.
I think you're good with smoking joints.
Okay.
Also,
but I agree with you.
People that enjoy smoking bowls. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you on like maybe moving on towards the vape
mm-hmm.
future.
Well, there's just so many options. And that was another thing I wanted to touch on, is that as Americans, we have vastly advanced the conversation with marijuana. It might be that we're feigning this, but it is really about medicine, that people with AIDS and people with cancer need marijuana. Everyone else, you're kind of playing a little bit. Cannabis is for AIDS patients. That's why we started any medical cannabis in places like Berkeley, California. It was the revolution of this type of stuff. And I think oftentimes we get away from that concept in thinking that, oh, they just say they want it. No, there's a lot of people with AIDS and cancer in the world. And those people want to be able to eat meals, have their last meal, take a nice shit afterwards, and fall asleep. So I wanted to touch on that because that's important to me as far as being an advocate of legal marijuana.
Question number two. What is a place that's special to you in the world in all your travels?
I only ever went there once, but it's in a place called Gundagai in Australia, and it was a glowworm cave. I love natural events like that that kind of give you – I mean, that's – I'm a visual glutton, so I've been to a lot of spaces in my life. The redwoods are beautiful and amazing, but they don't cut it anymore, which is pretty much a very visual glutton thing to say. I was just in the Puget Sound swimming with phosphorescence, so that's I constantly think about and love the Puget Sound in Washington State. But this cave in Australia is special. We're there with some people that have now passed on because of opioids.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Again, link it back up, but that person who I love dearly was taking us there and really psyching us out and telling us, like, man, there's a load of murderers in these woods. And we're like, shut the fuck. And he's, no, man, I swear to God, man, there's fucking a mental institution here, man. And I swear to God, a lot of people in these woods get fucked up. And we're like, okay. And then we're walking and you see a sign that's like, do not pick up hitchhikers, like mental institution. You're like, you motherfucker. And he's like, yeah, man, blah, blah, blah. To the point where we're holding one Nokia cell phone. This is a little while ago. As like those brick cell phones, as our light in front of us as we descend down this huge path, terrified. And you get to this cave at the very bottom and a waterfall is emptying into this cave. And it's really loud, like too loud to think. And at back as far as you can see, there's these blue glowworms that just kind of do this one moment of blue. And then another one does it and another one does it. So the space is infinite. And everyone in there said they had the same feeling of being 100% alone. Like everyone had left them. And there was like five of us. But I had the same exact feeling of being in there. And I heard all these cars. I heard bass cars, like the rattle of the trunk. Boom, 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 boom. And was making up this really crazy, very complex audio hallucination that started to turn into a visual hallucination because there was so much blue light around. That's the most special place I've ever been in the world. It's Gundagai, Australia. It could be in Mudjabah. It's in some weird place in Australia on the north coast by Brisbane.
Do you have a favorite snack?
Fuck, I love the snack. Yeah. I am someone that has, a complex relationship with food. I would probably be diagnosed as have eating disorders, but I have to bring my ninja on tour. I have a little blender and have to make smoothies. So I have a really complex relationship with food in that I don't eat out of gas stations. I'd rather starve than fucking eat that trash. I try not to eat corn syrup. I try my hardest not to eat sugar. And I make smoothies as much as possible. And I'm definitely about...
Where are you... So you just like... You got the ninja blender.
Yeah, it's like the size. It's the mini one.
You just like stop at a grocery store, like stock up and get just it straight into the ninja.
And sit outside plugged into the grocery store's outdoor outlet. And people stare at you and you say... Cheers, you want some?
Is this a sweet smoothie or a savory smoothie?
It can go all over the board. It can go all over the place.
Okay. Can you recommend a stoned viewing experience, movie or TV?
Jeez, that's a good one. I mean, I love things like Attenborough and the nature shows. I'm pretty sure your other listeners have said things like that before. I think that television is largely about the people you're with enjoying it. Like Fast and Furious... You can love the shit out of that movie with the right people that are like being silly and understanding that it's a silly film with beautiful driving in it. It has amazing driving in it. The movie I'm tripping on right now, which is a great stoned or otherwise experience, is called On Any Sunday, which is Steve McQueen made it in the 70s. And I would just recommend everyone watch On Any Sunday. It's about motorcycling in America.
Yeah.
And why it's a very free and beautiful sport. I guess I saw a performance by Marina Abramovich, and I was very stoned. I was vaping in the performance in the
you were vaping at the Marina Abramovich show?
What's the name of the place? The Armory Building. Yeah.
Yeah, so I saw that.
You saw it where you lay in the beach chairs?
Yeah.
Yeah, why wouldn't you be vaping in that beach chair? That was fucking incredible, though. Yeah. That was like I cried, you know? So, and I'm happy I was high at that moment because I was very open to every note of this piano. For those of you who don't know, this concert, you had to go into a room and be very silent in a beach chair until you felt kind of alone. And then a piano came out and did a long, slow, circular, mechanical, stage-moving piece and played this concert. And it was gorgeous.
What's a album that you would bring with you to a desert island if you're going to have one album to play for the rest of your life?
God, see, this one I thought about and thought it was interesting. Because I get so sick.
Musicians
of music.
Don't like this question.
They don't, right?
Yeah. Well, what's like something that has been with you through different periods and different cycles of your own life that you would take with you to the next cycle?
It's interesting. I would, for who I am, want to, and I'll answer in a more straight way afterwards, have a digital recorder with me and be making albums and demarking time, like do 12 months of one album, then erase it. And do another 12 months of an album and erase it. Am I stuck on this island forever? That's the most interesting way where I would be obsessed with my own songs because I'm a narcissist like many musicians are.
Yeah.
I would want to hear my own songs over and over again and get to a point of like, oh, I'm going to change that one a tiny bit.
And you think you'd stick with it even knowing that no one would ever hear anything that you
Well, it becomes creating. That kind of that sand painting idea. Yeah. But then real answer or much easier answer is going to be something like CCR or the Coasters. So Yakety Yak, Don't Talk Back, Yakety Yak, Yakety Yak. all that stuff, like, you know, run, Red, run, because he's got a gun. Some of that old boogity, 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 that type of stuff would get me through some moments of, like, it has to be something I can't really emulate or do. So it wouldn't be punk music and it wouldn't be rock music, you know.
What's something that you're still looking forward to in life?
Oh, geez. I would love to have a house. That would be really cool. I want to build my own house. Have you ever heard of Skånvin and Jensen? They did the architecture in a film called Ex Machina. That's a hotel that they're in, actually, in Scandinavia. And I spent some time living in Scandinavia when I was a teenager and have always found their architecture and their relationship to nature to be very beautiful. They have a much simpler, every person there has a relationship to nature, and it's very important to all of them, where in America you're kind of seen as like, oh, you're a woodsy person, I get it. And that comes with this other set of stuff. I want to make something in nature in Washington State that emulates Skånvin and Jensen, which is using glass and the actual nature to frame up the beauty so that, again, we can have these conversations with plants. And it's not just marijuana we're having a conversation with. It's the old growth forest that has influenced me a shitload. That, oh, you've been here 400 years and you're just creaking around in the wind, happy as a clam. Okay, I can learn from you. I want to listen to you. So I really look forward to building a home for myself in Washington State and resting there and finding positive conversations with plants. Growing my own weed on my own property has always been a goal. That's something I really look forward to.
How can people who would like to listen to Howardian find you?
Oh, we have howardian.bandcamp, and we have Spotify, and we have songs on.
I always ask people that, and it's always like, just like, type the name into a search engine.
Yeah.
It's not like there's not another Howardian out there.
There's not, no.
And you have a new album you're working on now. Where are you?
Yeah, we finished an album that's going to come out September 22nd. We're really, really proud of it.
What's the album called?
All Signs Point to Bliss.
Well, thank you very much for coming in, Ian. I really appreciate it.
It was a pleasure. I really appreciate it.
And that was Stoner. This week's show was edited by Courtney Harrell. Our associate producer is Justine Dom. All our visual branding is by Mickey Duje. If you'd like to get in touch, hi@stoner.co. We're always looking for sponsors. A few people have gotten in touch. The show is growing. You can help it grow by telling all your friends to just type Stoner in whatever podcaster they have, and they'll get a new episode every single Tuesday. I'll see you next Tuesday.